There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, let's get down to the Premier League, into the second hour of the show. Let's get the latest updates from Leicester-Liverpool. Chris McCarty.
Yeah, 38 minutes gone at the King Power Stadium. It remains Leicester City 0, Liverpool 1. Leicester threatening, though, in the last 5-10 minutes. There are signs that they are coming more into this match, but it is Sadio Mane's goal that separates the two teams. It was a fine goal as well. We've seen replays of it. It's just a quick thinking of Sadio Mane that makes it. The ball comes in, it ricochets off of Harry Maguire, who had such a wonderful World Cup, of course, with England. Sadio Mane, just in one little movement, a little toe poke with the left foot, Kasper Schmeichel can't get set, the ball flashes past the Dane into the back of the net, and that is what separates the two teams. Liverpool have had chances, Leicester had a chance, Alisson Becker, the new recruit, the Brazilian force, to be big and strong, to keep out an effort from Demarai Gray. That a half chance, really. Other than that, though, it has been all Liverpool, and 39 minutes now on the clock. It remains Leicester 0, Liverpool 1.
Let's go to the cricket, and an absolute sickener for England. There we were talking about them getting through to lunch and not losing a wicket, and what did they do? The ball before lunch, Jennings out. A bit of a sickener for the youngster, the man who's had a troubled series thus far, sickener for him in fact. He has gone LBW to the bowling of Shami for 36. The ball kept low by all accounts, did for Keaton Jennings. India certain, Jennings reviewed it, hoping that the angle from round the wicket might have saved him, but it wasn't to be. Decent knock from Keaton Jennings. He goes for 36, but England losing that wicket just on the stroke of lunchtime as well. England are currently 92 for 3 with a lead of 65. So 65 run lead with 7 wickets remaining. Joe Root still at the crease. I think we should talk cricket, shouldn't we?
We should talk cricket. Probably move away from talking about England, though, because they're not doing so well. Indian fans, of course. I know we've got many Indian cricket fans listening in on the Dubai 103.8. Keep your thoughts coming in as well to us on 4001. But you're right. I think for now, though, Tom, we talk local.
Why? Because we've got two of the best with us here today, representing the International Cricket Council Academy, the ICCA. We got the head of cricket development, Kaz Ali, joins us yet again, and alongside he is one of the development coaches down there at the ICCA. It is Jared Davids. Fellas, thanks so much indeed for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Awesome. Thanks for having us, yeah.
So, I'm just going to get your thoughts on that. Two fellas who've played at the highest level of cricket. You know the pressures that players are under, and you know the pressures going into a lunch break as well. Is that to lose a wicket, you know, literally the over before lunch, how much of a bonus is that to the team that takes the wicket, and what can that do to the confidence of the batting team going into lunch?
Yeah, psychologically it's a massive boost for the team that's taking the wicket going into the lunch break. They're taking all the momentum straight from the ball before. I think Jennings has, personally, I think he struggled throughout this entire series. So, you know, for India to take that wicket into the lunch break has been a massive momentum shift. And I think Joe Root is a big key wicket here, and he's got to stick around to obviously put a big score on.
Jared, just from your point of view, I mean, there is another argument to this, another argument to the case that you got the opportunity. If you don't have to come out and have that dodgy over before lunch or anything like that, so you've got the ability to come out, the new batsman that is, and set from lunch. Is there anything in that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for Joe, it's probably another extra 40 minutes for him to think about what he needs to do, compose himself and go out there. I think the next half an hour after lunch is going to be quite interesting for England. It's quite vital for them to maybe arrest that momentum that the Indians got going in and build again. They're going to have to work hard in this second session and really grind it out.
Fascinating series, this one. Looked like England had it wrapped up in the first couple of test matches. India have fought back manfully in the third test match. They've been good in this one as well. So many question marks around this England team at the moment. You know a number of these players, a number of the decision makers down there, Kaz. Root at four, he's got about a four, surely. He just seems to be so more natural there.
Yeah, he's settled there as well. He's got a lot of runs, and I think England's best player's got about number four. So for me, definitely Joe Root bats a four. I think what they're trying to do is tinker around and accommodate the rest of the squad so they can play the best side, and that's always difficult. Ed Joyce, who's coming as a new selector, he's definitely tinkering around with the squad. I feel a bit sorry for Sam Curran, who missed out on the last test, and he's come back fighting really strong. Moeen Ali, what a player. He's come back and taken Pfeiffer on his return to Test cricket.
Yeah, but then to be told you're back to three, Mo, you know, after the good knock in the first innings, then he's back to three, having got been in and out of the team. It sort of feels a bit unfair for Moeen Ali.
Yeah, definitely. And knowing Mo, I think he'll rise to the challenge. I think he's that kind of determined character. For Worcester, he's at the top end of the batting order. He's come back off a double 100 from the game against Yorkshire, so I think he's in good form. I think personally he's a top order batter, but dynamically I think he adds a lot of value down at the bottom for the test team, and he can score a lot of runs very, very quickly. With him, Butler, Stokes, Bairstow and Curran all fighting around, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and obviously Root thrown in there, that is a really, really good side.
Something we were just talking about, I want to get your thoughts on this. Obviously we're going to talk about the academy, we're going to talk about the UA team and much, much more as well. But I suppose one of the debate that rages is England's opening problems at the moment. Keaton, 36 under his belt here, he'll obviously be given the oval to see the series through. But with Alistair Cook not scoring runs and not looking like he's enjoying his cricket at the moment as well, if he decides to take a bit of time away from Test cricket or cricket at the end of this series, double trouble for England. And I know the names that are going to come out of your mouth, Kaz, as well. But what's the future for England 1 and 2?
Do you know what? I hear this debate about Cook. For me, you know, class is permanent. I think he's still got a lot of runs in him.
Yes!
The question fighting the audience.
That was
an
Alistair Cook fan, obviously, behind you there. Let's break away because that has been a goal.
Been a goal at the King Power Stadium, and it's gone the way of Liverpool. There's a lot of Liverpool fans down here at Barasti. You heard one of them then, and it is Roberto Firmino. It is, with a fine header, and if they don't beat you, Liverpool, with their pretty patterns in their attacking football, they're proving here they can beat you on a set piece as well. It's poor defending. He gets ahead of James Maddison, who just seconds ago, very fortunate and honoured to give away a penalty. He gets ahead of James Maddison, does Roberto Firmino. It's he with a header down into the bottom corner. Kasper Schmeichel with no chance. He's deserved that, has Roberto Firmino. He's been fantastic all afternoon. He's really led the line expertly for Liverpool. And on the stroke of half time, it is a mountain now to climb for Leicester City. It's Leicester 0, Liverpool 2. Absolutely super value for it as well.
Okay, sorry, we interrupted you there. So, Cook there for a while.
Yeah, for me, definitely. I think he's still got some runs in him. I think there's a big Ashes series coming, and that'll dictate his future. I think that'll be a really good way to finish for him. I agree, Jennings has struggled. I think it's his second pop at it, and I think he's shown his weaknesses, even though he's had a big money move to Lancashire and he's been performing for Lancs. For me, his partner at Lancs, Alex Davis, I think is the next up and coming lad. There is another lad down south who's been performing. The A team have been performing really well as well, so there are a couple of lads who can replace. But whether they're ready for Test cricket or not, I think is a different question, because for me, they're getting tested at the best against India's, you know, swing bowlers. And to be fair, India have produced some really good swing bowlers in this test. And they brought, you know, we rely on India's spinners to do all the work, but actually it's the seam bowlers that have been taking all the wickets.
Just wonder on that, and I'll bring you into this question, Jared. We saw Ollie Pope brought in, then just as quickly as he was brought in, he was brought out. As a coach, is that the mentality you have to take? You've got to blood them, the youngsters, in at some point. If they're not up to it, you take them straight back out? Or is the school of thought to bed them in, allow them a real run at it to get up to speed? I mean, where do you sit on that conundrum?
I'm for, once they're in, give them a run. You have to get used to the environment. It's not like, for instance, they're playing a lot of county cricket. It's a massive step up from county to test cricket. And any cricketer or any sportsman tell you need time in that environment to thrive. You got to find your feet. I'm of the school where I'd rather give a player one more game than one less game. And that's vital. You've got to give them a run.
You mentioned there, Kaz, that there is new selectors, Ed Smith and O's in there, and they're trying different things. You've got to say, giving youth a chance is absolutely paramount, and we were talking about it before you guys came down this afternoon. They've given an awful lot of men chances to really stake a claim, and no one stuck their hand up. In the case of Ollie Pope, has he got, do you think, what it takes long term?
The couple of times that I've seen Ollie Pope, I think he's shaped up really well. I think the defence is there. I think the question is always going to be about mentality and how quickly. I mean, some of the shots were quite erratic that he played for. I think the chances that he's going to get are going to be again, so I think he's got to be ready to stake them claims. And like you said, the opportunities are realistic. They're coming thick and fast. There's lots of chopping and changing going on. For any side, there needs to be some continuity, and that's the big thing for any bit of success.
And I've got to ask you about, obviously you played at Lanx, you're very much involved up there before you take on the role over here in the UAE. Our friend Haseeb, what's happened to Haseeb? Because obviously a couple of years ago, you and I were discussing, he'd broken into the England thing, he seemed to be the future. And what's happened to him since?
Do you know what, I put my 50 pence on it for my life savings, I put that he was going to be the next international star, so I'm having to pay that up. No, to be fair, I've just not scored enough runs. He's not very, very quickly in his second year. To be fair, he scores a lot of runs when the pressure's not on, and when he gets that opportunity, he just doesn't seem to be capitalising on the opportunity. Again, got out very, very cheaply in the last game. So for me, I think they needed a bit of time with him. I think it's a mental game with Haas. Technically, he looks one of the best players on planet Earth, but it's a mental game for me with Haas, I reckon, and it needs a bit of time for him to sort of succeed. You know, the likes of Virat Kohli's been on the phone and saying, you know, why is this guy still not playing international cricket? So he's got a big fan following, and unfortunately for him, it comes down to the number of runs he scores, not anybody else.
Well, watch this space with that one. As a young, talented boy, of course, still very much at the start of his career. In the fairness of balance, though, Jared, I've got to get your thoughts on India. Credit to them, 2-0 down. I think I was doing my research earlier this week. Only one team, would you believe, and this is a great little start, only one team has ever come back from 2-0 down 100%. In a series. Australia, 1936. 37. Yeah. Incredible that. Give credit to them, though, because they've went away. They've clearly worked on one or two things, and they're making a real fist of the series.
100%. And a lot of cricket credit has to go to Virat, and the team's really embodied his attitude and the style, his boldness that he's taken forward. I mean, they just needed time to get used to the conditions, and wow, have they gotten used to the conditions now. They really, I think they're hitting their straps now, and personally I'd like to see it go to all, and I think we might have another 2005 remake here in the series. I think
it's good for Test cricket, isn't it? Because Test cricket needs this at the moment.
100%. This is Test cricket. This is cricket for me. Personally, I'm pretty old school in that thinking, that train of thought. So, wow, what a spectacle! What a spectacle for cricket fans across the world.
Yeah. For me, you know, a lot of people said India are going to struggle in the red ball game in England. It's going to swing around. The batters are going to struggle. The bowlers are going to struggle, and it's going to be a final, you know, whitewash. It's not been that case. India have done their research, they've done their homework, they've actually outthought England on a lot of occasions, and England are actually playing the chasing game, so it's very interesting in terms of the psyche of things. For me, India have really done the research on how to play cricket, the red ball cricket in England. You see Kohli making advances in his stance, you see Pujara coming back in and scoring a massive 100 yesterday, so that would have done a massive boost for his confidence. But they're actually nurturing into a very good test side, and they've got some young spinners coming through, they've got some really good fast bowlers, and I mean extreme fast, and as a unit they're actually looking, they're a young unit, they're not an old unit, they're a young unit, so they've actually got some years in them.
I want to get to coaching now as well, because one of the trends, and not so much a trend, one of the notable things though in the last maybe 12 months, we're seeing test matches now not go the 5 days. Invariably we're looking at three, definitely within four, we've got a result after 4 days. As coaches, is that the new thing now? Are we looking at kids who are maybe growing up on T20, we're seeing an awful lot of players playing the T20 game, that concentration, that focus, all of the things, you go back to a Geoffrey Boycott, he would have loved to have stayed out there just nodding and plodding away and making sure to frustrate the bowlers. We're not seeing that now. The game and I guess the consequences of T20 have seeped now into Test cricket, haven't they?
100%. For me, it's a coach's nightmare, to be honest. To ask a kid to play a four defence is like, what's that? Ask him to play a ramp shot? I've got it, 10 out of 10, no problems. So the concentration level, like you said, has definitely diminished over time, because everybody wants to see boundaries, sixes, fours. But cricket's a game of patience, cricket's a game of time. And no matter the format, you've still got to bat. 120 balls is still a long time. 300 balls is still a long time, so you've got to make sure that you're really up for it. And as a coach, it's very difficult for us to try and regress and then from start again from scratch to try and rebuild players, especially from the ages of 15, 16, who just all they want to do is play IPL, and now coming into it, Emirates Cricket now, Emirates T20, so that's going to be another massive step going forward.
I did mention there that it's not necessarily a trend, it's just something we've seen. Will it become a trend? Are we going to to see now test matches invariably over within 3-4 days?
You know, there's a lot of talk about making 4-day tests because, you know, I feel sorry for the punter that goes and buys a ticket on the 5th day because it's never going to happen. And I really feel sorry for the spectators, because ultimately that's what test cricket is about. It's going to the 5th day, seeing a competitive innings between the two sides right up to the very last over. That's what proper test cricket is about. Seeing hard competition fought between the two sides, and ultimately the person who's, or the team who's got the skill level to actually outperform them is doing it even better on the last day. Now, that's when spinners come into the game. But what we're actually seeing now is spinners come in much earlier into the game, into the first day, even first afternoon. So it's changed dramatically, and I think definitely 2020 has got something to do with that. The psyche of cricket, the mechanics of cricket, just the general availability of understanding what T20 skills are about. Yes, it's good from a spectator's point of view to see sixes and fours, which we never really, sixes especially, the frequency of them in test cricket. Back in Geoffrey Boycott's day, we probably wouldn't even seen a double being run, you know? So it has definitely changed. I don't know what the future holds, because I reckon it's going to be 3 to 4 days test for me.
I suppose one of the big challenges, and you two will be perfect to answer this one, is changing that psyche of the younger generations coming in. You know, you're seeing kids from young age developing through your system at the moment. And we all know that attention spans are getting shorter, and the way that the shorter format of the game of cricket has been branded and pushed at the moment, it's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult to take them away from the wham-bam excitement of T20, T10, and what are the shorter formats. Is that something that you try to do down at the academy, Jerry?
100%, yes. To be fair, cricket's got to compete with a lot of other sports, and by its nature, it's quite long. So to try and simplify the game and try and shorten the game to add that excitement is quite important for our brand at the ICC, but also not to forget the essentials and the essence of the game. It's still a beautiful game. I love it. A lot of kids come out and play, but there's a balance that you need to strike as well. And it's very important to strike that balance, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And the balance is crucial for me, is because at the young age, we want them to have fun, try loads of different things, idolise what they see on TV, because ultimately that's what they want to do. They want to play the scoops, the ramps, the switch hits, the KP shots. They want to play all that because that's what they see, and they can sort of relate to that. But there's a time when us coaches, we've got to carefully plan non-linear development for children, and that's ultimately where we have to think 3-4 years in advance of what this child is actually going to succeed. You know, is he going to be a test cricketer? Is he going to be a one-day player? Can he play both formats? Can he play all three formats? And then that's where we come in, and that's where our planning comes in, to say, right, we're going to take you on a journey. You might not see it today, but in 4 years' time, when you get your national test cap and you're playing in front of 25,000 in Australia, we'll be very proud coaches sitting back in our armchairs.
I just say as a cricket lover with a son who loves his cricket at the moment and enjoys playing. I'd say the boys we were playing yesterday, had a game yesterday, and my son was keeping for us. And after about 8 overs, he just took his gloves and pads off and walked out. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm bored." I said, "I want to go and do some fielding if that's all right." I said, "What do you mean? You can't be bored." And eventually, it's like, "What are you doing?"
But it's interesting you say that, because scientifically, we know before they get to 13, they've got to sample everything.
Yeah.
You know, and kids have to sample everything. They have to sample wicketkeeping, fielding, bowling, scoring, umpiring. They have to do that, because we don't know where they're going to be in 5-6 years' time. We might actually be training them for something that they're not strong in. They might be actually strong in something else. When they get to 13, 14, 15, then we can start to specialise and say, right, we've got a future for you here. You've got a future for yourself. This is where the hard work starts. It might be 4-day cricket. It might be T20 cricket. It might be no cricket. It might be umpiring. It might be anything, but that's where we've got to start to say, as coaches, and I see a lot of coaches out there, and I've visited a lot of academies, we've seen a lot of academies, people are starting to specialise at younger 7 and 8, and for me, that's a no-brainer, it's a non-starter, because ultimately, all you're doing is, you're coaching your child out of the strengths that they might have in future years.
I know something that I shared with Ross last week, but I've got to let you know about it as well, because I'm not sure if it's the same for you, Jared, because I'm sure the sun always shines down in Gauteng, doesn't it? You never get rain down there, do you? But obviously, one of the challenges we have over in the UK is a thing called the weather during the summer.
Yeah.
And so, Gus, who Kaz knows, my 11-year-old, loves his cricket, got his first England top this year. And I thought, you know, it's about time you should go to your first test match, son. Right. You know, one of these coming-of-age things. Yeah. So, got on the firm to Curbs. Curbs sort us out with a couple of tickets to Lords. You know, where better to go and watch your first test match? He got his England top on. We went, first day of the test at Lords. and sat through 8 hours of rain. So that's the challenge that I'm dealing with at the moment, because, you know, there I am saying this is the pinnacle of sport, this is where you want to be, this is what you want to do, and I've never seen a more bored lad, you know, as he sat Blaise there in the rain for 8 hours.
That Blaise must have been torture. Absolute torture.
Plenty going on. Anyway, well, that's something we won't have to worry about in the coming months down here as well, because cricket really has come home to roost, has it not? Not just from the academy point of view, but the UAE as a venue for cricket tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I'm a young child and I see the likes of Pakistan, Australia coming here, the Asia Cup coming here with all these fantastic teams, I see the Afghan Premier League coming here, I see the T10 coming here, I see the UAE's very own T20 franchise, I see world cricketers coming here, majority of them, all them teams were walking through the academy. I forgot to mention the England Lions, Australia, New Zealand A-team, Pakistan A-team, they're all coming here before Christmas. It's Christmas coming at once.
It's extraordinary.
And for me, if I was a 11-year-old child, I would be looking up at these guys and wanting to spend as much time as possible. The academy is going to provide that for our young Adib Warriors. But to get this amount of cricket hosted in the UAE is great for the game. It's great for our spectators. It's great for our individuals who can actually afford to go and watch the game. But not only that, it's great for people who are actually playing the game of cricket within the streets as well, and actually looking up to the amount of, international cricketer who's probably 10, 15 yards away from playing in the stadium. So for me, that is an unbelievable experience.
Not a worry that there's oversaturation, because there is an awful lot of events. Afghani T20, you've got the UAE T20X as it now is. I mean, I'm inundated with press releases from people wanting a bit of time on the radio. It is extraordinary how many events there are. Any worry, though, if we don't get the pricing system right, that there is going to be a little bit of oversaturation?
Yeah, I definitely think so. It's about finding the balance. You've got to find the balance. Look, it's giving people what they want. Everybody wants to see T20, and I think it's time now that Emirates do have their own T20 tournament. It'll be great for not just obviously for the game, but for our local players, our under-19s especially, working with them now. They're ready, they're primed for it, they're hungry for that kind of platform. And look what it's done to Indian cricket, the IPL. The IPL, I mean, they're the number one test side now, and it's definitely transferred. It started there.
Here's a question for you boys then. We've been on the radio now, I've been working ARN full time 3.5 years. We've had you guys on loads, we've had various individuals from a cricketing standpoint, Will Kitchen as well, your colleague, yep, down at the ICC Academy. Phenomenal initiatives in place. Are we starting to see the fruits of you guys' labour though? Are we seeing more kids? Are we seeing more people take up the sport of cricket?
Yeah, definitely. And the thing that we're actually seeing more of is more academies coming. So if we've got more academies, they must be having more kids getting involved. Where we've seen a lot of kids coming through is the grassroots sports, is the participation levels at the under-7s, under-9s. You know, I had a three-year-old walk in for the first time, never seen cricket in his life, and just couldn't get him out the nets today. Because he was just running around, wanted a cricket ball in his hand, didn't know what it was, but, you know, mobility-wise, you know, did some really good stuff. For me, yes, there is lots of growth, but for me, there's still a balance that we need to find. There's still a gap between participation and excellence, and that's where good academies will nurture the gap. So we've got a very close link with the UAE and their pathway. The ICC Academy pathway is linked very, very closely to the criteria of UAE cricketers. So what we're trying to do is, we want the 16-year-old to feel comfortable with the next step up. We don't want to feel that they don't want to feel isolated in terms of what they're doing. When they make that next step up, it's something new to them. So me and Dougie Brown and the coaches, we've got together and said, right, this is what we believe in, this is what we're going to go with. And at a UAE level, once they step up, I'll guarantee you the players coming from the ICC Academy will be much more comfortable to handle the skills and the mental side of the game when they step up.
Did you come off the full run up to the three-year-old or not? Or was it just the...
I was charging in from the sidelines. No. We were just having a bit of fun.
And you had your scholarship trials yesterday. Talk to us more about the scholarship per se and the quality on show yesterday as well, if you can.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yesterday we had our second scholarship trial this year. Last year, what we found was we had to stagnate it because we had 200-300 kids turning up, and it was phenomenal. It was uncopable because we didn't actually imagine that many numbers coming through, but it was fantastic for the game. It was fantastic because there was a product at the end of it, and that was a realistic product. We had 9 scholars come through who were fully funded in their cricket activities. Now, out of them nine, we've got four who've gone on and represented UAE under 16s.
Wow.
So we're talking about that that transfer into national cricket. One's representing under 19. So we've got national representations through scholars. So we're actually getting closer. Yesterday we had best part of 70, 80 kids come through. Whilst that's great, these kids were coming from Sharjah, Abu Dhabi, Alain, and that's fantastic for us because ultimately the word is getting out. The challenge that we've got is yesterday's kids, I've selected and re-invited 24 of them kids from yesterday's group because we see a bit of potential in them. We see that there's some future in them. The best thing was they had family support around them. They showed some really good skill at the level that they're playing in. And generally, the cricket from last year's trial to this year's trial, the standard actually got better. So it's great to see. My original scholars from last year were also there to sort of benchmark.
Yeah.
And even them guys were like, some of these are pretty good. So they've got a bit of competition.
So just so we're clear, 9 kids chosen at the first round of scholarships, that's fully paid scholarships. So the parents are not having to dip in. That is their kid who has been given the very best tuition out here.
Yeah, absolutely. So they get their cricket for free, they get their strength and conditioning program. So what we emulate is the professional cricketers' day-to-day routine. So they gym 3 times a week, they perform the cricket skills 3 times a week, they play more games than anybody else. We do player monitoring systems, we do appraisals, we do everything that a professional cricketer would do. So this is what I'm saying about getting closer to the professional mentality.
Okay, so you do that for 1 year. What happens after their scholarship is up after 1 year? Where do they then go on to?
So basically, until the age of 19, they're still eligible to get a second year and a third year. Our job is to make sure that in the long-term future, we are producing cricketers for the UAE. We came across one particular female, and I'm fascinated by this female because she was fantastic, and it's great that we've got an individual like Isha who came on yesterday, and she's a great role model for the rest of the girls throughout the UAE, and she actually upshot some of the lads. So she will definitely be coming back next week, and I've got some bright ideas to get Isha involved.
More from Gaz, more from Jared, more from the ICC Academy in just a few moments' time. If you've got any questions for them, a perfect opportunity for you to text them in to us now on 4001.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Game on indeed. We're into the second half of the early kickoff in the Premier League. Chris McCarty's watching this one.
52 minutes on the clock at the King Power Stadium. It remains Leicester City 0, Liverpool 2. Goals in that first half from Sadio Mane and Roberto Firmino, and the stroke of half time, it was the Brazilian's header that doubled Liverpool's advantage. Leicester, as you would expect, Claude Puel has got into them in that dressing room in that 15 minute break, and they've had a great chance at the start of the second half. What a block though from Joe Gomez. He's made that centre back spot his own alongside Virgil van Dijk at the start of this season. Virgil van Dijk gets in an awful lot of trouble. It's James Maddison, the former Norwich man. He gets clear. He's got a sight at goal from out of absolutely nowhere. Joe Gomez comes sliding in to block the goal bound effort and keep Liverpool's clean sheet intact. 53 minutes on the clock, Tom. It remains Leicester 0, Liverpool 2. And if it stays like this, Liverpool are 4 from 4 at the start of the 2018-19 campaign.
England are leading India by 65 runs with 7 wickets remaining. The team's just coming out from the lunch break down at Hampshire, down in Southampton, down on the south coast of the UK. So we'll have more details on that one for you. England at lunch, 92 for the loss of 3 wickets. We're talking cricket, actually, because we've got the team from the ICC Academy with us here. Kaz and Jared have been kind enough to stick around with us. Jared, one thing that always strikes me when I'm down there at the Academy and down in that sort of infrastructure, and one thing that struck me recently at the award ceremony that we did just before the summer, is the different nationalities, and we get, that's something we see every day down here in the UAE, isn't it? It's a very cosmopolitan melting pot of nationalities. Is that something that is sort of beneficial from a coaching point of view? Because you've got kids from different backgrounds, different nationalities, different countries, all coming in. They might have been a bit of coaching before. They might bring a bit different mentality. Is that a positive for you from a coaching point of view?
100%. It's like you said, it's a melting pot. And for me, the natural flair in the UAE is unbelievable. I had preconceived notions when I arrived here a year ago, and being a year in now, it's unbelievable. Kids from 9 or 7 years old being able to do the things they're doing now. I mean, I couldn't do it when I was 7 years old. It's amazing. And to be able to tap into that and harness that as much as we have, has been amazing. It really is unbelievable.
You've got the same point of view as well from a coaching point of view, isn't it, Kaz? Because you've got, you know, you two bear it out, but also when you're down there, you see coaches from all over the world as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from my part-time coaches, we've got people from all around the world. I've just taken a lad on from Liverpool who's brought his Scouse racks with me, so it's good, refreshing to hear. So from my point of view, it's great that we can get lots of different quality coming in from different nationalities. The challenge that we have is they've all got different upbringings, they've all got different philosophies on coaching and what coaching looks like. We've just got to make sure that they live up to the ICC brand, which is what we're doing, a lot of work with our part-time coaches to bring life what we actually believe is a great vision, is a great brand, but more importantly is a great opportunity to go and coach in the right way.
You mentioned there that it is a melting pot, so many diverse cultures, etc., living here in the United Arab Emirates. I do wonder though, young kids, are a lot of them, whether they come from England, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, wherever, are they dreaming of playing for their country that their perhaps parents have come from or grandparents, or do they have aspirations of representing the UAE?
It's funny you say that. I had a conversation with a few guys in the week, and one of the things I'm starting to instill in our under 13s is getting them to learn the national anthem, the UAE national anthem. That's a good way for them to first identify with them being here, and secondly aspire to then play for the UAE, because that's the only way the UAE is going to thrive. And yes, they do want to play for their country, but I think they're slowly understanding now that there is a massive opportunity for them, especially from the ages of 16. They're seeing a lot of guys playing, their friends playing in that under 16 UAE team, and now in the under 19 team, and now the pipeline starting. Yeah. And it's just about to kick off. It's the next 2 years, Cass and I were talking about it, the next 2 years are going to be very interesting for the ICC and also for that pipeline.
I think the interesting thing for me is, we've got to look at the men's team, what they're doing at the moment. Dougie Brown's done a fantastic job with his guys. And more importantly, he's actually brought to life what the good values of UAE cricket look like.
I'm keeping an eye on the people, don't you worry, Kaz.
But the interesting thing for me is they've actually got a real good vision now for young cricketers coming through. You know, hopefully they'll win in Malaysia, they'll bring cricket locally, and they can compete against India, Pakistan on their home soil. That for me ignites a lot of youngsters to come and watch what UAE's brand of cricket looks like. And for me, it's realistic now that you can play for UAE around the world and be a professional cricketer. The fruit from this is they've actually got a good structure now at the 16s and 19s, and they're actually making that reality. The UAE X T20 League is actually harnessing two or three local young under 19 cricketers. I don't think that happens in majority of the franchise leagues that we see. They're too busy looking at the top end. But the difference with the UAE League is they're actually looking at the bottom end as well, so they have to nurture that transition through.
Boys, you mentioned the UAE falling in the Asian Cup qualifier to Hong Kong recently, 275 for 8 for Hong Kong, beating the United Arab Emirates. What is the state of UAE men's team, first team cricket right now? Where do you see it going in the coming years here?
They've made some massive strides. I mean, Dougie Brown's come in, he's been here, 18 months, and he's actually transferred not only the cricket, but the characteristics. The full-time contracts that have been going, they've actually gelled together nicely as a structure and a unit. To go and defeat somebody like Zimbabwe in their hometown is not easy, and they've actually done that very, very comfortably. So they've got the makings of the next associate. For me, they're going to be the next associate nation to transfer into full test nation. That's for me. I've got that much faith in the guys. They've actually grown individually. The pathway's grown individually, and I think they've got real big strides that they've made. I think it's going to be strong over the next couple of years. I think the young cricketers that are coming through that we see through the 16s, 19s, even produced through the local academies, I think is very, very strong for the game. The big thing for me is what support ICC actually provide them, giving them the platform to go and excel in the future.
Yeah, the men's team, no doubt about it, moving in the right direction, and that goes back to Akib Javid as well, and as you rightly point out, Cass, the job that Dougie Brown has done, it is fantastic, and they continue moving forward. Want to take it all the way back though, the lifeblood of the men's team, it is at grassroots level. We need to continue to unearth boys and girls who have got a talent for the game of cricket. You've got an open day next week, I believe, September 8th. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The open day is next September, on the 8th of September, 8:30 in the morning till 2 o'clock. We are asking everybody to come down, experience the open day.
Boys and girls.
We've actually got a separate open day for the girls on the 6th of October. They've got a 10-week program running, and that's a a new program that we're running for our girls, and obviously we've got some role models that are going to come into the side. That the next week's 8th of September is full of promotions, it's full of activity, there's lots of prizes on show, and it's a chance for you to go and actually touch base with your coach and understand what the curriculum looks like, where the games are allocated, what the pathway is for you to move up into stages. We've got our sponsors who are going to be down. Adib Warriors are going to, you know, that's what we've branded ourselves now. Adib Bank are going to be down. We've got Nissan, we've got Baby Shop down there. All these guys are going to be putting on lots of goodies and lots of prizes. So we want to see everybody coming down. Even if it means you walk out the door and still a little bit unsure, that's not a problem. But we're going to give you a platform to come and talk to me, the rest of the coaches, and get a chance to walk away with lots of goodies, lots of prizes. And more importantly, sign up to something that's going to better your child individually over the next couple of months.
Kids, how old are the kids? Is it open to kids from as young as...
As young as 3 Baby Shop.
Wow.
3 all the way up to 19.
And it's free.
Free
on the day. Like I said, promotion giveaways like you can never believe.
So, I'll be there then.
So we love giving promotions away, but the big thing for me is to make sure, I mean, I call it my family, because that's what I want everybody to be part of. We want to look after the ICC family. We're not really fussed about anybody who goes to a different academy. We want you to come and experience what ICC brand, the academy brand, looks like and what it feels like. We want you to understand what your child's going to benefit, and more importantly, we want you to feel comfortable when you're walking out the door, to think you can come back and keep asking them questions. And more importantly, it's your child's future with professional coaches. We've got level 3, level 4 coaches. We don't believe in just throwing kids out there and letting them train by themselves. We've got, you know, medical staff at every single game. We've got insurances in place. We've got a pathway in place. We've got lots and lots of activity with games on professional ovals. None of these things which other academies can offer. So we believe we're heading in the right direction. We've still got a couple of things that we need to do right, but we believe that we've made massive strides over the last 18 months. Speaking to parents, they believe that they've seen a massive transition from in the last 18 months, and that's the credit to all those guys.
And Jared, in terms of if people are listening in and they want to get their kid involved in cricket and them involved back in cricket as well, in terms of the coaching programmes for the different age groups through the Warrior system, have we got new seasons? Are they up and running at the moment, or will they kick into action in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, it will start. Our first game in my age group would be...
Sorry, Jared, we've got to break away here. I think Leicester, we've got a goal. My goodness, we've got a goal. And Alison Becker, this is going to be talked about for a long, long, long time. Lauris Karius was at fault in the Champions League final. Two horrendous errors. And Alison Becker, he's cost £62.5 million. Oh, he's had an absolute nightmare. What is he doing? The ball's played back to him. He's trying to be too cute. He's trying to do Cruyff turns in his own penalty box. We're watching a replay of it now. Virgil van Dijk feeds the ball back into it. It's a bad back pass, in fairness, but Alison Becker has got opportunity galore to clear it. It's an embarrassment. Ian Acho picks his pocket, eventually it falls. Just getting confirmation who that was. I think it's Ghazal, the summer recruit from AS Monaco, who it is. But we watch this again. What is Alison Becker
bring back
doing?
The other guy.
My goodness, I would get a game for Liverpool at this rate. It's a horrendous error, and Alison Becker has left. Well, he's left red-faced is what he's done. He's given Leicester absolute belief now that they can get something from this game. It's Leicester 1, Liverpool 2.
So just to go back to those coaching programmes, up and running.
Yeah. Yes, so our first game for my age group under 13s would be on the 16th of October. We're planning on having five games before the end of the term, home games, and then another 5 games that were still within the term away. So it's going to be quite interesting. A lot of the focus going forward will be on match play, because that is one of the massive, massive focuses, I suppose, with all that is happening at the beginning of the year this year with our facility being used. Going forward now, it's going to be matches galore. Part of the program for us is obviously on under sevens, is the focus is just on play. Moving up to the under nines, where it's a little bit more structured, learning a bit more about the game, learning about the rules of the game. Under 11s is more your technical ability, and when they get to my age group under 13, under 14, under 15, it's going to be more about tactical awareness, understanding oneself. I think that's quite important. I found that over my years of coaching, a lot of emphasis is just put on cricket and not a lot on the person. And for us, we're not just developing cricketers, we're developing people here, and that's quite important for us.
Yeah, and so anybody who's looking to come down, so we register on the 8th. The very next day, that week, we start our coaching program. So from the Tuesday the 11th, we'll kickstart our 15-week coaching program, and we have a natural break that you know, on the 22nd of December. We'll go all the way through, four sessions a week, you know, whichever age group. You can have one session, you can have four sessions. Our girls program starts just on the back end, at the start of October, sorry. And what we're trying to do is build a vision for every cricketer to come through the door, and we want to cater for their needs. So whether you're a baby shop cricket club coming in at 3 years old, or whether you're an elite scholar coming in at 18, 19, we want to make sure we fulfill your potential, whatever that looks like. And just rightly, as Jared has said, we've actually mapped out everybody's development stage. Yeah. What we're not doing is, I mean, I've seen this on many different occasions, not just here, but in England as well. We just, coaches tend to just chuck them in and say, you know, let's just crack on with it because there's another 2 hours that I've gone through. What we actually believe is we want to make the best use of them 2 hours across the 15 weeks. There's about another goal happening here, isn't there? It's tense. But for us, so anybody who's looking to come down on the 8th, you know, we'll welcome you with open arms, walk away with free goodie bags. Coaching program starts from the 9th. We've got four sessions a week. We've got a women and girls program. What we want to do is make sure everybody is catered for.
It's the ICC Cricket Academy. It's down at Dubai Sports City. They're active on social media. They've got all sorts of courses for all different age groups. Check them all out on the website. Jared, bless you. Thanks so much indeed for your time this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And of course, our friend Kaz O'Malley. Thank you very much indeed to you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Liverpool fan?
100%.
Oh no, if I knew that, you wouldn't have been allowed on this radio show.
You're not a Liverpool fan, are you?
I'm definitely not a Liverpool
fan.
Not Leeds United, are you?
No, you're going the wrong way. I'm more of a local lad, Burnley lad, so Burnley and a bit of Man City creeping in.
Oh,
so,
Jesus.
Yeah. It's not because they're winning everything, but.
Yeah. Fellas, enjoy. Thanks so much indeed. We're going to take a short break. Cheers. When we come back, we'll have more from Ross Chris.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
Game on indeed, yes. Let's just go to the football very quickly. Chris McCarty, tell us more.
Yeah, 67 minutes on the clock, so we are, midway through the second half at the King Power Stadium. It's Leicester 1, Liverpool 2, and I guess the big talking point from this match, if this result does indeed stay the same, okay, yes, Liverpool will have made it 4 wins from 4 at the start of this campaign, but it's the horrible, horrible goalkeeping mistake from Alisson Becker. He gets himself in all sorts of trouble a few moments ago. Virgil van Dijk it is who plays the ball back to the Brazilian. We have been told time and time again in recent weeks, since Liverpool paid £62.5 million to sign the Brazilian number one from AS Roma, that he is very comfortable with ball at feet. He wasn't a few moments ago. He gets himself in all sorts of problems. It was Iheanacho, the former Manchester City man, who picked his pocket, robbed him of the ball on the byline, crossed, and it would eventually be rammed home by Rashid Ghazal. And that has given Leicester some impetus now. They are the team that are attacking. Liverpool look uncertain of themselves. I expect one or two changes is more to be made by Leicester as they hunt for this equaliser. It set us up, though, for a grandstand finish. We are into, or fast approaching, the final 20 minutes. It is Leicester 1, Liverpool 2.
And problems for England. They lost a wicket last ball before lunch. They've lost a wicket first ball after lunch. That man, Johnny Bairstow, coming in at next up at number 5. He has been cleaned up. His leg stump has been left cartwheeling after just one ball. So facing that very first ball, Johnny Bairstow has gone, which means that England are now 98 for the loss of 4 wickets. They lead by 71 runs, but with just 6 wickets remaining. As much as I love Johnny, I'm not really sure what he's doing in this team at the moment, given the fact that he fractured his finger in the last game.
And India said that they would target Johnny Bairstow, and he's gone for a duck there. Yeah, that's not good. And Johnny Bairstow really batting at 5 as well? Not for me.
Does it make sense? We are fast approaching the top of the hour. Roscoe, you've got this interview we want to run. I want to run that in its full entirety in the final hour of the show. But we did interrupt you during your American sports wrap just a little earlier on. Are there other stories that we should be knowing about stateside?
Well, breaking news coming out from the United States right now, just seeing it on Twitter. The biggest trade of the NFL year right now, Khalil Mack of the Raiders is getting traded to the Chicago Bears. Gentlemen, this is a guy who's set up to be the highest paid defensive player in NFL history. When he gets traded to the Windy City, they're going to be signing the 27-year-old to a contract extension. This is a guy that can make it or break it for your defense. He's a defensive clog. He's been wanting a big money contract. Unfortunately, John Gruden just hasn't been able to pay him. The Oakland Raiders have not been able to get the type of money that he wants. So he'll be heading to Chicago, and now Chicago has their man in middle inside linebacker.
Talk to me about John Gruden back, of course. Chucky, because he resembles the doll that we won't get into because it still gives me nightmares to this day. But he's back in coaching. He's been an analyst. I'm a big fan of Gruden. I love when he speaks. He sounds incredibly intelligent. He's got a great way about him. Are we expecting miracles to be done by Gruden at Raiders?
He's certainly passionate, isn't he? He loves his Oakland Raiders. He's used to be on the Oakland Raiders, then he moved over to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he won a Super Bowl.
That's right.
He's a very, very good coach. He's been recruited year after year, after every season. Will you come back to coaching? Come back to coaching. Well, 10 years, $100 million, and you get to make your own roster. I would do any job in the world for that amount of money. So, yeah, he's coming back to Oakland. Keep in mind, this is Oakland's last year in California before they move to Las Vegas, so he'll be part of that whole entire rebuilding season. I think John Gruden will like it out there in Sin City.
Oh,
I think
yes.
He's got a lot of building blocks to build on with that Oakland Raiders team. They're definitely going places.
And just finally, before we go to the news at the top of the hour, and of course continue our build-up ahead of our live game at 6 o'clock, Chelsea against Bournemouth, we'll be getting some team news for you from our colleagues at TalkSport in just a few moments' time. This time last week, we were getting ready for the biggest fight in history, weren't we? Well, the biggest fight in YouTube history. My son was very excited about it. There was a lot out there on social media. I didn't stay up till midnight to watch it online. But I did get up and check the score the next morning. And what a surprise, Ross Crist.
Yeah, YouTube star Logan Paul. He's coming out saying that there's some people coming out and saying his fight against KSI was rigged last weekend, man. Well, who would have thought two YouTube stars would rig a fight? But Chris McCarty, you say you can't believe it.
We're talking about this on the show. I'm done. Cheerio.
21,000 people in your neck of the woods. Well, you're one of your favorite towns, Manchester. Not your neck of the woods. 21,000 people came out for this. 30 million people tuned in on the internet to watch these YouTubers slug it out in the ring.
It's insane.
Logan came out saying that some people thought the fight was rigged from the bottom of my heart. I can't say that on air. We put our hearts on the line in everything we had, and we were warriors out there beating the crap out of each other. So he says it was a completely non-scripted fight, and they really, really went, I guess, hard nose at it, you know? But 30 million.
About the same figures that we get on the grill.
White collar fight night, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh my goodness gracious.
Because for a minute, that's what it was. But, you know, as much as the debate sort of rages about the fact, well, you know, is this sport or is this social media or is it the whole thing? The one thing it has prompted is that conversation that's been going on since the fight then is what sport can learn from social media. If
true.
You see that, talk about the eyeballs.
Absolutely true. And we had Joe Morrison in, broadcaster in on Sports Tonight this week, with Facebook of course making moves in the sports broadcasting world now, getting La Liga rights across the Indian subcontinent, and social media and sport, certainly from a broadcasting point of view, it is merging. And I don't think it will be too long before we see YouTubers, people who are garnering huge followings by talking football, by having an opinion. I don't think it's going to be too long before we see them actually on mainstream televisions. Why? Because they bring such a huge following with them. So opposed, and it's something we've discussed off air, that, you know, your little boy Gus, you get an ex-football player, for example, who's giving an opinion, Gus might say, well, who's that?
Yeah.
Whereas Gus is more likely to listen to a YouTuber who may not have a professional career behind him, but who's got an opinion like the rest of us and is able to sell himself in the way that he has.
Closely related, but not quite the same, but on the same ballpark. Putting bums in seats, you see Usain Bolt right now out there in Australia playing on an A-League side. I mean, just completely coming in. It could be a publicity stunt. Who knows? They can say he plays a bit of soccer, but, I mean, it's just, it sells tickets, doesn't it?
And that's it.
They said they have 20, normally in their this soccer stadium in Australia, they normally have 2,000 people that show up to their games. When Usain Bolt came on the 20th minute, they had 10,000 people in that stadium. So it went up five times.
It's the blurring of lines. A lot of sports identity crises is what it is. It's looking at how do they ensure that they have a bigger slice of the pie, and whether that be cross sports pollination. We saw the McGregor-Mayweather. It's a Frankenstein. It's a mix right now of all things. And yeah, where sport will be in the next 10 years, fascinated to see.
Sports and entertainment blending.
I hope Chris McCarty gets into sumo wrestling. That's the one sport that I would like to see him sign up for.
Wow. You're listening to Dubai 103.8. You're listening to The Grill. Final hour of the show coming up next.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.